Welcome to the Optimism Show. Today we have Dawoofi, who is the vibe architect at Opacity Network, and we'll be discussing the future of Farcaster and really what it takes to grow on decentralized social. Let's get started. David, can you tell us, can you tell me a bit about yourself, who you are, and what you're really working on?
Perfect. Yeah. So my name is David. I'm Dawoofi everywhere on Twitter, Farcaster, Telegram. DMs and DCs always open. Currently, I am the vibe architect or head of growth, depending on where you find me at Opacity Network. And we do perform ZKTLS, where you can verify data anywhere on the internet. And we have a bunch of things attached to that and some great partners that we can definitely dig into. As far as who I am, I have a TradFi background, mostly in fundraising and sales, pivoted to crypto. Well, first pivoted to some startups, ran a kimchi company for a little bit, did some partnerships in the health tech space before landing back in crypto in 2021 after having first discovered it in 2017. Since then, I've worked at a Polkadot project. I worked at Airstack before this. I've done consulting and quite a bit of product feedback for consumer folks, particularly building the Farcaster ecosystem. But more than anything else, I'm just a person who loves the idea of incentive systems that are better for the world, broadly speaking. And I sort of believe that we can use technology to help people. I think that's a good thing. And that's what drives me a lot of the time.
Yeah, we can definitely, especially with the blockchain and how more and more people are starting to build real apps with the blockchain that can truly impact both consumer behavior and business behavior. I definitely agree that it can help people a lot. And I just want to hear specifically, you're really big on Farcaster. You're one of the original users. You've been on the network for a long time. First of all, I'm really curious, how did you even discover Farcaster back then, let alone really realize the potential that this new, let's say, social media app has? But let's put that label for now.
Yeah. So I discovered Farcaster originally from actually just a tweet. There's a fairly prolific writer named VGR, who I'm a huge fan of. He's relatively active on Farcaster, I would say. And he sent out something that said, hey, I don't even remember what it was. I'm on Farcaster now. Here's the word of the day. Message it to Dan Romero and he'll get you in. And that was sort of, I'm the vibe architect, right? I can't do technical research. I was working in crypto at the time. So I was looking for fun things to do. And to be blunt, I kind of just fucking hate Twitter. Not because Elon's a bad person. This is not some sort of idealistic thing. Everyone's calling their incentives. It's fine. It's just sort of a cesspool of engagement farming because they need to drive revenue, which I respect, but I don't sort of personally want to engage with. So I found it. I messaged Dan. He got me onboarded. And what really struck me as sort of a go-to-market, marketing growthy community guy, I was like, wow, first of all, these people are actually talking to each other, which is something I hadn't seen in social media anywhere, literally anywhere. I'm an elder millennial. So I remember when I first got Facebook was probably 2004, 2005. And people were talking to each other. I made a lot of friends. I made friends on MySpace and since then, I just I don't know if I got old or something else changed, but people weren't talking to each other anymore. It was all about farming and becoming an influencer. And that wasn't the case on Farcaster. The second thing that was really special about Farcaster, which I found out later, was very, very intentional from Dan and the Merkle team, was these were some of the best founders and smartest thinkers in the space. And they were actually getting traction and they were the ones who had reach. And if you wanted to talk to someone important, there wasn't a better place to do it. So I'm always looking for signal. I'm always looking for where the smartest people are congregating, where the most interesting things are happening. And it was early days. So I'm not saying that the products were top tier, but the ideas definitely were. And it was people like Jack from Icebreaker, Johnny at Hypersub that I really sort of almost latched onto in terms of oh, this is something very special happening here. And if you can follow that signal, at least this is the type of signal that I'm able to detect, then you're much more likely to have these experiences where you get to sort of watch the blow up from the inside as opposed to coming later to it. I think that's played out more or less how I expected it to. I've been very lucky since then to, get a couple different jobs from my activity on Farcaster, but it's just one of those, I don't even know how you describe it. It's all this sort of trite, like one sentence wisdom, like, oh, it looks like a toy at first, right? Like people love saying that, or like follow the builders, like that's where the alpha is. And it's like, everyone says it. And then you go trade shit coins on Twitter. And like, I'm not saying you can't make money doing that, but like, that's what everyone said about Ethereum in 2017. Like that's where the builders were. So you had, it was very obvious it was going to be the most successful. Well, you know, history rhymes, but it doesn't repeat. And I very much felt that like the strongest signal from builders that I had ever seen was on Farcaster, and that got me to stuck around.
Ken, the community, especially like how, even though it's like still a small social media app compared to like Facebook or Instagram or any of those, like the community is so strong, like when it comes to building the actual things, that we don't know what's going to happen in the next even couple of months with Farcaster and in terms of what is going to get out there. And I'm going to ask you more about the big picture. Like, what do you, since you've been using, like, as you said, like your activity on Farcaster has even landed you some new roles. How do you see Farcaster evolving from here on? Like, since you already have 2 years, 3 years, like two-ish years on Farcaster spent already, how do you see it evolving in the next, let's say, 1 to 3 years and changing in that sense? And what do you think it needs more of and what it has like an amazing percentage of?
Yeah, it's a great question. Trying to think about the best way to approach this because there's a lot of different branches to that question. I will say some of my thoughts that'll kind of be a little bit erratic and we can dig into anything that you think is interesting. The first thing is that just Farcaster, the protocol, it's a social graph effectively, right? Nothing more, nothing less. Merkle's developing Warpcast and you know, they develop frames, all this other stuff. But let's just speak about the social graph by itself. This is one of the most powerful things that has ever launched, in sort of my opinion. An open social graph where people are actually talking to each other, discussing things with each other. They feel emotionally connected to each other in a way that is basically publicly accessible is an extremely powerful thing. And I think you're going to see more and more, especially consumer products, leverage this to sort of end the cold start problem. Right? Like sort of see a vision over the next 1 to 3 years where a lot of those questions around how do you get users, how do you bootstrap a network sort of go out the window. And if you have a great consumer idea, especially, you'll just say we're building on Farcaster. And as soon as someone logs in, they can see all their friends. They're encouraged to invite their friends. This is a massive game changer for just the speed of innovation of products that can be built. So I expect a shitload of new products to get built on Farcaster. I expect most of them to die and fail miserably. And I expect a few of them to really figure out how to put social into products and make them, you know, 1000x better. Because there's very few places in our life that we interact on the internet where we wouldn't want some sort of social proof or social engagement tied to it, whether that's like your Amazon shopping or your LinkedIn. Or it's like your Venmo, right? Like all these things are actually much better products if you have your social graph already integrated. And that's not even, we won't talk about the financial stuff, it's just Farcaster, but like all that stuff together actually does create better products. So that's the Farcaster protocol. On the Warpcast side, they want more users. I think that is the right North Star. It's always been Dan's North Star. And he has a very sort of like top-down approach to how to do that. And I think that's correct. There was someone who I forget was on the MOZ, the Moment of Zen podcast. And I don't think Dan was even on this episode, but they were talking about the idea how networks sort of can only degrade in quote unquote quality. Because if you think about the bell curve, like if it's just all low quality shit, it never takes off. If it's mid, no one really wants to be there. You sort of start high. And then as it grows, right, the more amount of like mid takes will just naturally go with it. So as long as you keep feeding it at the top, though, with high quality signal, you can continue to grow the network that way. And I suspect that's the strategy. And I suspect that's what you'll see happen. You're going to see more. I know you're going to see more products and teams get funded in the Farcaster eco, not necessarily to build alternative clients, but just like, again, because you have that go to market sort of figured out, you can get your seed round or something like that much easier, knowing that your first 100 users, your first 1,000 users are going to come overnight effectively, right? Which would take months or sometimes years in other ecosystems, especially at Web2. I was even talking to someone who wanted to launch like some spices. Like they make spices at their home, like a spice mix, like a Montreal or like salt and pepper mix. And we went through all the normal stuff. I was like, you can go through the accelerator because I did this kimchi company, right? You can go through an accelerator, you can go to the farmer's market. But if you just want to ship something, like even that, like just fucking build a frame, right? Like you'll get 10 clients faster for almost anything on Farcaster than you would anywhere else. Trying to drive SEO traffic to a Shopify, paying for ads on Amazon, like even physical goods, like Farcaster today is sort of, I would describe it as like unparalleled from going from 0 to 1 and 1 to 10. One that's 10 to 100, if you have reach and you've been around, still fairly easy. I think if you're at the very top of the game, then you can get to 1,000. But it's, I think Dan's job very much now, I don't know if he sees it this way, this is how I see it. It's very much Dan's job to figure out how to make it, you know, 10,000, 100,000, so that all you really need is Farcaster to build a great product as far as your go-to-market goes. And then you can figure out everything else. You get those really tight OODA loops because people are transacting in the feed on Warpcast and things like that. So I expect more projects. I expect a lot to fail. I expect probably a couple more viral features to come out from the Merkle team. And I expect a shitload of people to get mad that it's like, it's not the way it used to be, but that's the name of the game. That's how things go. Sorry, nerds.
I mean, it has to change. It has to evolve. Otherwise, it won't be that interesting ever.
It's funny. I have a lot of people, you know, message me like, oh, like Farcaster should do this and Merkle should do that. Or like people tell me like, oh, you should have gone to apply for a CMO position there. I'm like, one, Dan doesn't need a CMO. He's got a social network. Most products don't have that. But consumer stuff, especially on Farcaster, like you don't need a marketing guy. It's just a waste of money and time, is my honest opinion, if you have reach on Farcaster. So you're getting massive savings there. But also people are trying to talk about like, can we push money around? Can we do this? I guess just as like, I'm the growth guy, like a CTA, like just go do it. Like I've talked to a number of people who had ideas and I had to tell them like, hey, that's already happening. Someone's doing it. They're not yelling about it because they're, you know, they're keeping it in their own little cozy corner, as Dan calls it. But if there's anything you want to do, like, just go off and do it. No, nothing's stopping you. That's why I started my podcast.
Since you're really the growth guy and like you've been in this realm for a number of years, like what do you think are the main things right now happening in Farcaster that will start driving future growth, let's say in the next 12 months, that will start bringing more business within the ecosystem?
Growth for Farcaster or growth for...
First of all, growth for Farcaster. And then I would love to dive deeper into how can apps and like how can builders grow faster in Farcaster as well? Like how can they really test that out with frames or...
Yeah. That is. Yeah, I tend to be verbose, so I'll try to keep it tight. You're seeing a lot of experiments. There's already some with like some cross-posting from some major Twitter influencers or Twitter, you know, crypto adjacent people, stuff like that. Like, you know, Mark Hendrickson, like Solana from Pirate Wires, they're doing some cross-posting stuff. I think those experiments are interesting. For me, it's like not what I need in my feed, but I get why they're doing it, and I don't think it's a bad idea. So I think you'll see more of that to sort of drive people to have just like better content in their feed, because I think that's the other thing people forget about, like exponential growth curves. It's like every step function you have, like the new people are 10 times more important than the old people because there's 10 times more of them. Right, like that's the way it works. If you're hitting your growth curves correctly, so you really want to populate it immediately with high quality content and sort of show proof of value or something like that. Or like it's just like Mark Andreessen and Mike Solana post here, I'm gonna stick around, right? Versus like who the fuck is DeWoofy and like who is Jack and who is Bias, right? Like they might post good stuff, but it won't like wrap people in the way this other content will. So I think it's a smart move. I think you'll see more of that. I suspect, honestly, little tinfoil hatty, but like the kiosk funding and like you're gonna see more projects getting funded. It's a very smart strategy to sort of try to lock people in, is sort of dirty in the crypto space. But the truth of the matter is, like the hardcore builders who have been on Farcaster for a while, like there's just way too much value to walk away from Farcaster right now. So as long as that remains the most efficient and effective go-to-market, then you're going to see more builders continue to bring more people into Farcaster, right? Like whether you have like sign in with Farcaster as an option, or whether like if you have the Farcaster social graph, the product you use is just better. There's a million ways that these offshoots of Farcaster, right? And they're not even like, they're not clients, right? They technically don't even need Farcaster, but they're integrated because that's where they were incubated. Then those products end up driving more users to Farcaster. So you get sort of a flywheel effect with the builders who are popular or have reach on Farcaster. With the actual protocol itself, right? And then they all start feeding to each other as well. And some of that's happening behind closed doors, but some of that's happening very much out in the open as well. So I think that's what you'll see. And Sorry, if you could repeat what you want to talk about. You want to talk about apps next?
The second part was first. Actually, let me reframe that question. When it comes to like builders entering Forecaster, and let's say they want to, as you previously mentioned, you say like apps or builders in Forecaster don't necessarily need a CMO. They have it all there. What do you think are some efficient ways to approach to get those first users and to be like, hey, this project can be a success, or it's let's move to the next one?
Yeah, it's a good question. So Forecaster, like, culturally has what I call like very like strong antibodies against like bullshit. It's just sort of the way it developed. And I think there's pockets of bullshit. I'm not saying it doesn't exist anywhere. There's definitely certain parts of Forecaster that I like actively choose not to engage with. And that hurts my following numbers, but I don't really care because I'm not interested in those pockets anyways. So I try not to get too caught up in the number. But if you hop in and you're authentic, especially as a founder, as a person, and you talk about more than just your product, let people get to know you as a person. I find that that's like still hands down the most effective way. Like this is like you, to your point earlier, still a very small network. Everyone is reachable. If you give product feedback to some of these folks, especially, you know, like even like Linda from Bountycaster, like has a massive following. Like if you start using the product, like, and not like in a disingenuous way, but like you have, you know, some design work to do. And it's like, you could go to Fiverr or you could use Bountycaster, like use Bountycaster. If you have a, you know, if you have a subscription model, like use Hypersub. There's a ton of tools out there that you can get value out of directly from just using the product and they're great products, but you get the added boost of like, these people will interact with you. They'll give you product feedback. They'll let you know, how they think is best to use their product. And you can ingrain yourself very quickly. I've seen people complain about like the power badge and stuff still. Like, so fucking easy, actually, if you just are a genuine person and try to do something that's real. So I highly encourage everyone to get involved with that. Like some of my most popular posts are just in gardening. Like people love the squash I'm growing, right? It's like, it has nothing to do with, well, I guess, okay. So like, yes, from the largest zoomed out angle, it has to do with growth in the sense that I'm growing things on my rooftop. Yeah, yeah. But if you're just a real person, like you'll get ingrained very quickly. And then once you're ingrained, then you can start, again, be genuine of like, I have this new product. I'm looking for 10 people to try it out, and whether you can incentivize them. Like everyone has something to offer is also sort of my stance. And whether that is like, I'm willing to give your product a try, or like I have sales background. Let me give you some feedback on your stuff, or I've got $20 to spend. I subscribe to your Hypersub. Now I have access to your channel, right? Nerd from Tabletop has a great subscription for his channel, right? Like there's all sorts of things you can do that variability can get overwhelming. I understand. It definitely takes time. I'm not saying it's easy in the sense that like it'll take no effort. It'll take effort, but it's actually pretty straightforward if you approach it from, you don't have to necessarily be altruistic, but you just don't be extractive. Like come to bring value to the network and the value will come back out 100% of the time. I have never seen anyone fail when they approach it with that that mindset. So
no, that's absolutely true. Like really providing the value within any network gives it back afterward. Like it will come back eventually and you will get probably not what you were expecting, but what you're supposed to get.
Yes. It's funny, like Forecaster people actually, like when I do my podcast, or like a good example is actually I had a couple of guys that I met at FarCon, Rafi and Uncle Devo, like help me build a frame because I wanted to basically I was calling bullshit. Like people were saying like I can't get engagement. I was like, I'll tell you what's wrong with your engagement. Like sign up. And I thought like 10 or 20 people would sign up, and like almost like 100 people signed up for like profile feedback on a vibe check. And they were like, we don't have to put our names on it. And I was like, dude, you guys have a company. It's called Frametown. It helps you develop frames in Figma, which is like a banger idea. I was like, I had to force them. I was like, put your fucking name on it. Yeah. Like put your name on it. Like I'm the growth guy. Like put it on there because people don't really want to pump their own bags, but like I'm getting value out of it. So I want them to get all the feedback as well. People are like, who built that frame for you? I was like, they built it in like 12 hours. It was absolutely insane. So things like that happen all the time. Obviously I'm not going to pretend I'm not in a privileged position for having gotten a little bit lucky and I had a little foresight to be there early, but there's plenty of people, who were not and have found their own niche.
Yeah, exactly. There's so like, that's one thing that I was quite surprised about Forecaster, just how many different spaces there are that I would have never thought of on any other platform.
Yeah, the channels help. I think really it's just more than anything else, it was the way the network was seeded, though. Like, it's the fact that, like, it's great builders who are very genuine, and are down to make connections and help other people is just really, really informative to culture. And you don't really get a second chance at building that.
Another, like, thing that I would love to touch on, that just as we talked, like, Farcaster is really helpful to builders so they can get their initial traction. And you also have the community for feedback, as long as you actually want that feedback and provide that feedback to others as well and be a valuable member. I'm really curious, since you're the growth expert also at Opacity and you're an expert at go-to-market strategy, like, how is Farcaster impacting the growth of the company that you're working with at the moment, Opacity, and or eventually how you're thinking that it will impact the growth of it?
Yeah. Well, we're super early days. We have a seed round announcement is coming, and I'm really excited about that. That's going to, you know, pump quite a bit. But I would say there's a couple different ways. On, like, this just the strict BD side, like, it's nice to be able for me to just hop into people's, DCs and, like, ask them for a meeting. I'm like, hey, I got a sick idea. I want to pitch it to you. And, like, people are very responsive. I have a decent reputation, and I've always tried to be as helpful as possible. So there's a lot of goodwill there that I've built up that I'm very happy to call on when there's something that I believe in that's going to be, like, helpful to them as well. So, like, our newest idea that I'm pitching to a shitload of people right now is, like, a referral program that you reward based off of Web2 data. So it's sort of a play on the vampire attack, but because you can verify data from anywhere now. So, for example, like bracket.game, I'm talking to Joe from Courtyard about, like, how they can, retrieve data from, like, Web2 platforms like eBay. To then inform who the best users to come and trade Pokemon cards on their platform are. So being able to do those types of things. Sorry, go ahead.
So that's more like the community aspect that you're building with Opacity as well. So how it helps, like, bring the Web2 data and build communities from different aspects of Web2.
Yeah, but that's what we do. So I can pitch that to other people. They can build their own communities based off Opacity's data, right? Since we can verify other stuff. So that's, like, on the BD side, that's, like, very helpful. On the growth side, my founder is, like, a fucking legend. Hirsch has, like, 250,000 followers. He's one of the most followed on the network. And he is, I don't know, I think it's fair to say he's a little unhinged at times, but that's part of the reason that I love him. And his takes are, like, genius. And so even getting to know him has been great. And that's how I, initially found this role. On the actual, like, getting people to, like, look at what we're doing side, obviously we have reach that helps quite a bit. In talks to launch things like apps, demo apps that we could have in the Explore page that I'm really excited about, and access to the high quality builders on Farcaster. It's like, what's a like worth on Twitter versus what's a like worth on Farcaster? Like, it's easily 10 to 100x for me, right? If we're looking for builders who are very serious about the products that they want to do and they want to make it 100x better with verified data from anywhere on the internet, that's my audience. It just really is. And that's everything from, like, other info providers over to consumer apps. There's a lot of people who we can partner with that make Farcaster a great home for a technology company like us.
Yeah. And eventually, like, since you said, like, right now you're working on the seed stage. And but to be honest, I find it quite fascinating what you're building with Opacity. And if you can briefly tell to the listeners what Opacity is, and then I'll ask my next question.
Yeah, for sure. So the super, super tiny version is, and I'm still working on, we're still working on wordsworthing, but it's basically verifiability everywhere, right? And what does that mean? That means that if you think about, like, ZK stuff or blockchain data, like, the thing that's so powerful about it is it's public and verified. Like, you know it's true. So it's really fun to build on because you don't need, like, access to $60,000 Twitter APIs, or you don't need to try to hack into OnlyFans to figure, right? Like, it's just there. And when you do data transference on Web2, we have this TLS system, which was put in during the Netscape days, so that, like, when you put in a credit card, you know that it's being used for the correct purposes and the data comes back. The problem with that system is it has symmetric keys, so you can't introduce a third party with the magic of Opacity, which I'm not the dev, so I won't go too deep into the architecture. It's just not my expertise. And so it's not fun to hear me talk about it. It's much more fun to hear our founder talk about it. And we can link some videos or something. But the very interesting part is, like, now you can get verified data from anywhere, which unlocks just a huge number of use cases. Some of the more interesting ones that we're working on right now are company called Nosh, who's verifying DoorDash data so that they can bring ratings over as well as orders onto their own platform and onboard it onto their protocol. So it just has much better economics for the drivers and the restaurants, and just a really good experience for onboarding because you don't need to like re-upload your restaurant dishes. You can just pull it straight from the app. There's another one called Daisy that's super cool. They're doing TikTok influencer payouts, which are very difficult to verify, obviously, with the TikTok API. But because we can do it, you can automate these payouts so that you know, these influencers can share in the revenue that they're generating for brand deals. There's a ton of other interesting stuff in the works, but broadly speaking, the idea here is that if there's anything that you're building, that would be better if, you know, the internet was a completely open system. We enable that.
It's quite a strong statement.
I try to make strong statements. Hot takes, strong statements. Like, I'm the growth guy, I'm the storyteller. It's going to come in hot. You got to kind of shock people a little bit, right? They got to shock people's systems. Like,
you perfectly summed it up, though. Like, you definitely perfectly summed it up.
Perfect. My founder will be happy to know it's working.
I want to ask you, like, the next thing that my next question was going to be, so since you're really the growth lead of Opacity, I'd love to hear like your thoughts specifically on how do you see the go-to-market strategy, especially for entrepreneurs in the first place? How do you see the go-to-market strategy be different for companies such as Opacity that are primarily Web3 based compared to the Web2 go-to-market strategy? Like, what are some similarities and what are some differences that people really need to pay attention to? So they actually succeed in what they set out to succeed in.
Yeah, for sure. So Opacity is, in specificity, just for clarity for anyone listening, you know, we're a Web3 company in the sense that we use Web3 technology. Like, we use ZK proofs. We have an IDS for economic security. This is all built out so that this data is as verifiable and as trustless as it could possibly be. It's absolute maximum level of security with the maximum level of throughput so you can scale it up. But ultimately, what you do with that data is totally up to you. So obviously, we work with Web3 companies who want to, for example, prove ownership of a Tesla Powerwall and mint an NFT for it because it informs their protocol. Great. We love that. Other companies are like, dude, we just work in Web2 consumer. Like, we don't want wallets. We just want to know the data is true. And then, like, we'll take on the trust assumption, like, stored in a fucking AWS bucket. Yeah. Great. We don't care. Like, whatever makes sense for your product, go off. So we work with any technology company that wants to open and user-controlled internet, right? Because we just need the user cooperation to get this data. But back to the other question about how Web2 and Web3 are different, like, a lot of it just really revolves around this concept of, like, is your data locked up or not, right? Because you can have SLAs, you can have long-term agreements, you can have a big sales force like Salesforce has to go sign these massive enterprise deals because you're offering a very closed service. You know, switching costs are high. I'm a big fan of the Acquired podcast. And like, when you run through the 7 powers that they always run through, like, a lot of that stuff just doesn't track as well. But I think, I don't know if it was Eddie, but someone from the A16Z team was talking at crypto startup school, a crypto startup accelerator, about how, like, there are still moats, but they've just moved to where they are. Very often they're at the protocol level where switching costs can be high. Brand is obviously still a massive power that you can play. But ultimately, because the code's open source and switching costs tend to be low for, you know, consumer apps or something like that, relatively speaking to like Oracle, right? You really need to make sure you have incentive alignment. And the great salespeople, the great marketers from Web2 really understand this deeply, that like, you are using your product because it's helping you, and the amount of money you give to us is less than the value gained. If you think about it from first principles, that always is sort of what it boils down to. That tracks over perfectly. It's sort of the mid to low level folks who know how to like close the deal and get someone locked into a contract, or like, they know how to pitch to mid-market companies in the Pacific Northwest with headcounts between 500 and 200. Those things don't track over as well, because you can have huge companies like Pump.fun built by a couple people, but you can also have massive companies that don't do anything. And I won't shit on anyone specifically here today. So you have to really think much more deeply about like who you're trying to partner with. Do your visions align long-term? Is there a real business use case that's going to help both of you? Whatever your goals are, right? Your true North Stars, are you heading there together? And if you can get down to that very base level, then you're going to be able to form really strong partnerships that are like lasting, Lindy, enduring, right? But if you don't, and you approach it from a like, I have a product, I'm trying to sell it to you to get money out of you. Well, first of all, you're probably going to burn out of customers because there's just not that many people with money. But two, you're going to start raking people over the coals. And when someone else comes along with a better incentive structure, you're going to lose that customer immediately. You're not going to have time to like even switch it back. Those bridges just get burned. So relationships matter even more. The vibes matter more. I highly encourage people who are thinking about partnerships, sales, go-to-market, like whatever you want to call it, to really think very, very deeply about like what your North Star is, what you're trying to accomplish, and does this person on the other side of the table align with you? Because there's not anything else you can guarantee in the space.
Yeah, and I love how you put that, because like it's true, not many companies really think beyond the fact of just get the sale, but really, is it really a fit? Like, what happens then? But so many companies, and it's quite sad actually, but I'm quite happy that I don't see it that much on the Farcaster and also the Optimism ecosystem in general, is that it goes beyond that, okay, we're going to get that client and they're going to churn in like 2 months, three, if we actually don't send them one email or we send it a bit later with the reminder email. But the thing is over there, like what you just said, thinking taking a more multi-layered approach to how to even doing sales in the first place. Like it's not just as it was, like just splash, like as VCs were splashing money around in companies and not necessarily caring about the sustainability of the company in the first place. I was just saying, like, I really love the approach that you're taking, like the multi-layered approach to sales, like really having that vibe check in the first place and not necessarily just thinking of getting the sale, but actually creating that long-term partnership in the that will last and build, that you can build with together.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, Benji being the face of OP, like absolutely crushes. He had a great, I think the tweet is like, but I want to see you win more than me or something like that. And I was like, but I want to see you win, right? Like, it's like, that's, those vibes really matter. I think OP does a great job with the retro PDGF too. Like, you know, just build it and like, we'll figure it out afterwards is sort of a nice ethos. And I really like the way they iterated and learned from the PGF grants as well, because not too many people do that. A lot of people just throw it once, screw it up, and then move on with their lives. So there's some good ethos there that I really like from the optimism folks for sure. And yeah, and you can see it in the success. You can see it in the number of people who are excited to build. I think we've probably still got more work to do around incentives, around airdrops and public grants and stuff. I don't think anyone's figured it out 100% yet, but I'm really happy to see folks like Benji and the team like try, right? Like, we're never going to get there if we don't give it like.
I just have one last question for you. Like, when it comes to people who are entering like either the Farcaster or Optimism or even Web3 in general as new entrepreneurs to the space, what are some things that you believe, or like people that want to transition their careers into the Web3? What are some things that you believe they should really hear and know that oftentimes are overlooked and then they just have to figure them by themselves?
Yeah, I think like the opportunity to sort of reinvent yourself, and reinvent's a strong word, but you know, come as your most authentic self is like highly underrated in Web3. It's really rewarded very deeply in the space. And it's uncomfortable. I think it's uncomfortable as fuck. Like when I first got on Farcaster, I literally looked at it, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to play the games. I said to myself that I hated them on Twitter, and I just decided not to do it. But then it was still rough. It was hard to go in and really be like the version of myself that I saw on the inside. And you can do that in Web3, and you'll be rewarded for it. So I highly encourage people to come with the most authentic versions of themselves. And you can see it like on influencer content on TikTok telling you how to like have an AI write your resume to like talk to the other AI that's like filtering, and like that shit doesn't matter. Like, I think like deep down in my core, I just feel like it just point blank doesn't matter. I think it's like all just like farcical fucking posturing nonsense, but like really doesn't matter in Web3, because at the end of the day, it's like, you know, especially if you're trying to pivot your career or something, like this is dating. This isn't like marketing, right? Like, you're trying to find the one, and like maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't. But I think people even approach it like I'm getting as many Tinder swipes as possible, and like, you know, blast my email out to like 500 resumes a day. It's like, great way to get something that like you don't fucking care about. Like it's way more effective, like in terms of like happiness and even things like compensation. If you're going to go in and say, I've got like a distinguished view, there's something I really want to work on, and I'm not going to let anyone stop me from pursuing that. I'm not going to wait for permission, right? Like there's this permission, this ethos on the tech side for crypto, but it extends to anyone who's trying to pivot into any sort of area. And kind of from first principles again, because there aren't like, you know, traditional sales roles or there's obviously some marketing roles, but it's like, I talk to a lot of people, they're like, I'm like, what do you do? They're like, oh, I run social media campaigns. I'm like, that doesn't mean anything, right? Like, do you love the design aspect? Do you like the messaging aspect? Do you like, you know, are you a reply guy and hop in the comments constantly, right? Like, those are all really different aspects that'll lead to like sort of different roles in Web3, whether it's like community manager, or like ecosystem. Like, we have all these opportunities that are much more aligned to what people really like doing, right? If you boil down to like what the thing is, like I like connecting people, right? Whatever it is. Then you should be an ecosystem person. Like I love, I love helping people. You should probably be a community manager, right? So like there are parallels, but try your best to just pursue the things that you want to pursue, and it'll work out. My favorite like distinct example of this is I hired a community manager at my first role when I was at a Polkadot project called Oak, who had almost no crypto experience at all. He was into NBA Top Shots. That was like the thing he loved. He didn't know shit about like consensus models or anything. But like for fun on the weekends, he had built a Discord server of like 3,000 or 4,000 people. I was like, dude, if you can do that on the weekends for Top Shot, like I'm sure that if you're working full time, you can build us like a killer fucking Discord server where like everyone is super pumped about the project. And he crushed. And he crushes to this day. And I love the guy and I made a friend. But if you come with that type of experience, right? If you come with like the proof of I can do something because I love doing it, you're gonna get the looks that you want, as opposed to like trying spending hours a day trying to configure a resume that looks like something that you think other people want to see.
So really being like your authentic self. And actually, I find it really fascinating, like Farcaster and like the blockchain ecosystem in general. Like while there's so much farce around, like the authenticity really stands out, and just as everywhere else. So yeah, no need
to kind of smell it.
David, it was an absolute pleasure having you here today.
Yeah, no, this is awesome. I hope everything goes well for you. And my only call out is always ever if anyone has anything that they're building and they want to talk, like message me literally anywhere. I'm perpetually online.
Thank you for tuning in with us on this episode of The Optimism Show. To get the keynotes of this episode, go to insights.optimism.show. And don't forget to leave a comment on who would you like to see as our special guest on the next episode of the show. And until then, stay optimistic.